Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammaker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
A Firm Place to Stand by Lori Altbaumer. She's either being stalked or losing her mind. A job at a camp in the rustic and often rugged landscape of West Texas offers Maribel Montgomery a chance to escape both, especially if she makes sure no one knows why she's there. But when the body of a woman washes up in the river on her first morning, her hope of a safe place to start over are swept away. The suspicion she's being watched follows her to her new home, and Maribel is forced to take a stand or keep running. Does she have the courage to face the danger stirring at the Pool of Siloam camp? If she doesn't, another girl might die. If she tries and fails, it could be her. Circumstances force her into the acquaintance of Connor Pierce, a man with secrets of his own. Can Maribel risk working with him in order to save the next victim and find a missing girl? Or is he the killer?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammaker, and today I'm chatting with Lori Altbaumer. She's a lifelong Texan who lives in a small community not far from the rugged West Texas landscape that she loves to write about. So we're going to talk about her new book, A Firm Place to Stand, and all things writing. So welcome to my show, Lori.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So you talked about, so you live in Texas,
yes.
And you're a lifelong Texan. Do you,
yes,
do you use, how do you use the landscape to spur you to write? What is it about that kind of makes you want to write about it?
For me, I think that there is a spiritual aspect to it because I see God's creativity and like so many things that he teaches me just from, I grew up in this landscape, hearing from God by being outside. Nature is one of the things that really speaks to my heart. So I love to observe trees, plants, the sunrise, the sunset, to feel the sunshine, the wind, all those things just come together. And I think that I just don't think that we should overlook them and their power to us as well. So, and Texas has such a diverse landscape that it just makes a wonderful opportunity to share those things.
No, I love that, Lori, because, nature, it does have such a way to restore our soul, right?
Yes.
And, I mean, I have, as some of my listeners know, I have four children. And especially when they were young, when they were getting all kind of crazy like kids do, I just would send them outside. I'm like, okay, you haven't had enough fresh air, right?
sending
them outside. And whenever I get grumpy, I would go sit on our porch swing for a few minutes if I didn't have time to take a walk or something. Just because just the being outside, being with nature just has a, just breathing in and out of that fresh air. It sounds counterintuitive to our modern minds, right? That the landscape, that trees and flowers are just, even in a place that's not, beautiful, can still have that restorative nature. And I do think God has created our universe that way. So I love that you're able to kind of use that in your writing as well. It's kind of neat.
I saw a statistic the other day, and it was something like we spend 90% of our lives indoors, and that's not how we were created. God placed Adam and Eve in the garden. He didn't place them in a hut in the garden. He placed them in the garden, and be intentional about seeking those moments to be just outside and experiencing that all the senses come alive when you go outside into the natural world. And it is very restorative.
Yeah, it is. One of my favorite parenting books, although it's not really a parenting book, was called Last Child in the Woods by Richard Louv, L-O-U-V, mm-hmm. for listeners who want to know. It's an older book, but he talks about and he's not a Christian at all, the restorative nature of nature, and talking about taking, like, especially city kids out into the woods mm-hmm. for, like, these camps or week-long, and how it just really kind of helped to resettle them, like their spirit.
Yes.
And
yes.
he was attributing to all the trees and the fresh air, and there's a lot of, you know, he had a lot of wisdom in why that was. And I was thinking, yes, and just layer God on top of it, who created it and made us to enjoy yes. his creation that way. And I think that, you know, you really kind of have a better picture. And when we can use some of that in our writing, you know, describing, mm-hmm. you know, a mountaintop or a beach or even just what a character notices, the fresh spring flowers or something like that,
mm-hmm.
I think it really can add an extra layer to our writing and really
yeah.
help, you know, really help, you know, kind of get all those five senses into it, you know, right? You know, it's great
right.
to kind of have those and that feeling of it. So, yeah, I think that's just, it's just so much fun.
And when you put a character in an environment, that environment can pull out strengths in that character that they didn't know that they had either. It's beautiful. You know, there's a reason we take flowers to people in the hospital or send flowers to a funeral. It's that restorative nature of nature.
Yes, yeah. And I think that as a writer, it's kind of fun that we get to kind of explore how our senses would be in those
mm-hmm.
situations. One of my current works in progress is a book where there's a scene in a cornfield where they're running for their lives in the cornfield. It's the end of the summer, so the corn is not fresh. I mean, the corn has already been harvested, so mm-hmm. it's just the stalks there. And just that thinking of all the dust because it hasn't rained lately and just all those...
Yeah.
What that would feel like and how that could be kind of terrifying that you're going to start sneezing or coughing and give away where you are hiding in that. So I love that kind of using those senses to kind of create that tension, especially writing romantic
mm-hmm.
suspense, that there's lots of opportunities for that when we look at nature.
Yes, there is.
So speaking of characters, how do you connect with your characters? I know that sounds funny to non-writers, but, I mean, we really have to get to know these people. So how do you connect with your own characters in your books?
Well, I connect with my characters in my book kind of like I connect with people in real life, and that would have to be summed up in the word awkwardly. It doesn't come quickly. I admire these writers who can sit down and just flesh out a character and get so much detail from them. And I don't know, maybe it speaks to my own personality, but my characters don't open up to me that quickly. They will come to me in a blip of an idea, maybe a dialogue or a scene I saw and I wondered what that is, or a dream, and I start exploring. So the people kind of drift in that way, and I have to get to know them, which results in me rewriting a lot of things, because getting to know them means I live with them through the course of the story. I start seeing what they're doing, how they respond, and sometimes I get it wrong. The book I'm working on right now, the main character, she finally sat me down and told me that she was not as big a wimp as I was making her out to be. She has a lot of repressed that she tries to keep hidden, and I made her a very submissive person, and she was like, she finally told me that's not how I would have handled that. That's not what I would do. And so I'm having to rewrite because I kind of got stuck. She I guess quit talking to me. But
yep.
there are things even in my first book that I didn't know until I was nearly finished about that person. And, yeah, it makes me go back and rewrite. I don't know. This sounds, if you're not a writer, this probably sounds like lunacy to you. I know my husband thinks I'm somewhat unhinged. But I just can't. If I try to sit down and connect with my reader all in one sitting, or over a short period of time by filling out one of the character charts that a lot of people use, I end up with a flat, one-dimensional cookie-cutter person. It just does not come alive for me that way. So I just start following my character around. We start going through a story, and she starts warming up to me, or he, and telling me more things about themselves as they become comfortable with me, I guess. So there you have it. I'm not normal.
No, I think you're perfectly normal. You're just, I'm the same. I can't do those. Those character charts are useless to me. I mean, yeah. I will do the physical description, and I've learned this. I learned this the hard way with one of my first books when my editor's like, okay, so here's the art fact sheet to fill out. We need photographs of your hero and heroine and what movie star they look like. And I'm like, well, since I haven't done that because they live in my head, I sent the description to my teenage daughters and said, hey, you guys look around Instagram and get back to me. It was the best decision I ever made. I gave them the descriptions. I said, fine, they found suitable ones. I was able to send those and use those. I was thinking, but I'm not doing that again. I'll just find the pictures when I'm working on the description and just put them in my files, so I'll just have them and don't have to go, because that was just drove me crazy. I'm like, I don't know. They're just in my brain.
Exactly. It's more of a person than a physical image. To me, the physical image can be a little bit fluid. You know, I may know that they're tall or short or stocky, athletic, those sort of things, but, and I'll have to color stuff so I can put it in the book, but to me it doesn't matter. To me it's the personality that I'm physical image. So I don't get as hung up on that image, that the actual physical picture of them, until late in the story when I need to start sharing something like that. So
I just find it's easier for me now. I just grab it and stick it in there, and I don't really look at it. I just have it. I have it for when I need it later, because it's just easier to do it at the front end. And then I've also found that I love the Emotional Wound book to help me.
Yes.
And so I'll do that. I'll do, like, the physical characteristics, find a picture, name them, which is always important, how to figure out their name, and then come up with, okay, what is their wound, what am I going to do? And that helps me then. But then how they react to that all kind of unfolds as I write. But that's basically all I do. I'm like, I can't, because you're right, because my characters, they talk to me and they go, oh, well, and then I realize, oh, well, this one's mother said this to her. Well, I had no idea she was going to say that, and this created this problem, you know. So
exactly.
I'm constantly surprised.
I know, but, you know, when we meet people in real life, we don't just divulge all of our stuff to them. Or they don't do it to us. I mean, it takes time to get to know people. So I think people, readers sometimes don't, I think they think we just make the character completely up, but that's not the way it works.
Well, I mean, we do and we don't, because our subconscious, I think, comes along and tells us all these things, because these are, you know, characters. But sometimes some writers, the character just comes fully formed from the earth.
Right.
And sometimes, like you and me, Lori, the characters are somewhat fuzzy around the edges, and by the end of the book, they're clear. And it does necessitate some rewrite, some going back and going, oh, yeah, I have to make that a little more clear that this is her problem, and because I didn't think it was going to be her problem. And then it became her problem. So, although I don't always like that.
No, it's all fun. It's all fun.
Yes, yeah, so let's talk titles for your books. Now, are your books indie published, or do you have a traditional publisher?
My books are indie published, so the title rests firmly on me, being able to pick out something decent. I read a thing when I was getting ready to start thinking of titles as I started writing that really it surprised me and opened my eyes now, but they were saying that the title really doesn't have to reflect the book so much as just be catchy. And I started looking at the books I love, the titles, and sometimes, you don't see the connection. Now, so I love for there to be the connection in there, but it doesn't always have to be there. For me, titles come, a lot of my titles, I have a whole list of titles I keep for books I haven't written yet. A lot of it comes out of Scripture. There'll be a passage in Scripture that really speaks to me, like my book, A Firm Place to Stand. That title comes out of, it says, he set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. Psalm 40. Anyway, so now my next book follows this one. It doesn't come out of Scripture, but I played on, since they're kind of going to be in a series, I played like alliteration with it. And so my next book is A Far Way to Run. So we've got A Firm Place to Stand, and then we'll have A Far Way to Run. So it's an alliteration thing because I do. I love playing with words. I love putting them together. Something really fun I've found to do when we are traveling around is I read street signs, like mixing up the names of the street signs to come up with character names or a name that I think that might make a good book title. My daughter moved, and one of the roads we pass on the way to her house now is called Blue Cut Road. And I'm like, I don't know, but that just resonates with me for some reason. So maybe there's a book in there. But I just keep a list of all those things. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you think about the subtext. What subtext might that string of words, that title, send to a reader? So does that reflect cause intrigue or whatever? So,
right, in a romantic suspense, you don't want it to sound like just a straight romance or be so esoteric that they're like, it's a, what kind of genre is it? I mean,
right.
You do want a little bit of that connection to help readers, clue readers in a little bit, but we can have fun with it as well and figure out how we want the title to go with the cover image and all that stuff. I mean, I've been traditionally published and indie published, and it is kind of fun to think of, how do you want the covers to look like, and how are you going to, help readers to know, oh, this is a romantic suspense. Okay, good. I'm where I need to be. Or not. I mean, because I don't want readers who don't like romantic suspense to really read my book, because they're not going to enjoy it.
Right.
And then they'll give it a bad review, and it's not my fault. So I think we have time for one more question, Laurie. What's your go-to when you need a pick-me-up to keep writing? What do? Take a nap? Drink more caffeine?
Oh, take a nap. That's awesome. Honestly, my go-to sounds counterintuitive, but if I feel like I'm just kind of stuck, that the creativity is gone and it's just nothing's happening, I grab a good book and go just immerse myself, disappear, get off the grid, and just let myself step into another story for a while. And there is something about that rejuvenates my creativity and restores my sense of purpose in telling a story. And so that's really the best way. Now, a nap isn't bad. I will do a nap quite frequently. And I find that I get a lot of ideas right in that little spot of where you're not awake, but you're not asleep, you're just kind of in that in-between, and I will solve a lot of problems right there in that moment, and maybe I just make myself believe that so I can take naps and have an excuse to justify it, but really, it's a good book that really moves me, is well-written, and just immersing myself in a different story, and then I come back here refreshed.
Yes, and so I'm going to circle back to our earlier part of our conversation, talk about nature, because that's kind of one of my go-tos. I'll sit out on our front porch with a swing, or we have a back enclosed porch if the weather's not amiable to being out on our front porch, and just kind of look out at the trees or just kind of let my mind wander for a little bit, just that kind of decompress. Or if I need to be writing, and it's definitely my writing time and I really need to get the words down, I'll throw in a fire or something really outlandish, aliens landing or something, just to get past that scene, and then I'll have, of course, I'll have to cut it later, but that's okay. Sometimes that helps me just to write something really, really dumb. Like, it's never going to get in the story, but sometimes that helps get me over that little hump and back where I need to be.
Another thing I'll do is go for a walk if the weather's good. Because just getting out and walking, that physical activity in a different environment, and I guess it's, and I have learned to carry with me a small handheld recorder. I used to take a notepad and a pencil, but that was just hard to keep up with and write. And this way I can just, you know, something starts coming to me while I'm walking. But that does good too. That's probably more productive than the nap, but, you know.
Yeah, but naps are great. Everyone should take a nap, that's what I think. Well, thank you so much for being on my show today, Lori.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to get to talk writing with another writer.
Right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I've been talking with Lori Atbaumer. She is a Texan who uses nature in her stories, and you can learn more about her through the links with this podcast. And keep listening for an excerpt from her latest book, A Firm Place to Stand.
Now an excerpt from A Firm Place to Stand by Lori Atbaumer. So am I really that unfun?
You have your moments.
His eyes darkened as if he were reading her, as if he understood where this was leading, or thought he did. Maybe this was working. She tucked her hair behind her ear, positive he was well-versed enough in flirtation to recognize the gesture. That was a gesture, right? At some point, he needed to step up and take charge of the advance, so she could reject him. That was the goal, nothing more. She didn't have a subconscious desire to know Connor found her attractive, did she? But hadn't that been the real motive in every relationship she'd entered? Fear of being forever unwanted had led her to seek confirmation she was desirable, that she deserved to be pursued. What she was now coming to understand was the desire and pursuit were never for her, but what she could offer a man, primarily in the physical realm. This new knowledge rocked her for a moment, but she could explore that later. She had to see this moment through first. But this felt like Satan's dirty work. And she was an idiot who should have thought this out a little better. Just do it. Then she could think clearly about the real issues at hand. Unfortunately, what she suspected with her heart went against what she expected with her brain. It scared her to know she hoped her heart was right.
Maybe we should talk about the YOLO thing. It's hard for me to talk to others, but not you. I truly believe I could tell you anything.
Oh, for the salvation of any minuscule shred of dignity you have left, stop talking. Connor nodded but remained silent. A muscle in his jaw twitched.
Do you want to...
She cleared her throat, shifting her eyes to the porch as she ran her tongue over her lips.
Do you want to come inside? You know, to talk some more?
He stood like a granite statue, hard and unmoving. The look he gave her as hot as a solar flare. Then he walked toward her with slow, measured steps. She swallowed. Bad idea. Very bad idea. He came so close she had to tilt her head back to see his face. The scent of the tea lingered on his breath. He leaned down, his lips within inches of hers. Her brain froze as her body betrayed her. Her heart hopped out and ran toward him at full speed. What was she supposed to be doing? Because this certainly wasn't the plan. His warm breath fluttered against her cheek in a deep,
husky drawl.
No, Maribel, I do not.
He pulled back, searching her eyes in a way that shot pain deep into her soul, then turned and walked away. He'd been kind to her, and she had betrayed him. Did anyone else smell burning hair? She felt an intense kind of heat reserved for the especially mortified. She spiraled around, flinging the cabin door open. That something was wrong registered a second too late. Her feet slipped, flying up in the air, while the rest of her smacked onto the wet concrete floor of her cabin. She didn't know if it was the sound of all the air leaving her lungs or the thud of her body hitting the floor that caught Connor's attention. But when she opened her eyes again, there he stood, staring down at her.
Well, I guess I will come in.
He flipped on the light and knelt beside her.
Anything broken?
Does pride count? She appreciated the smile she received, considerate and warm, not the disgusted and disappointed look she deserved.
I can't imagine you'd have any left after that painful attempt at seduction.
That obvious, huh? She moaned as she tried to sit. And for the record, it was flirting, not an attempt to seduce you.
Whatever you tell yourself to feel better. But I found it encouraging, too.
He slid his arm beneath her shoulder and scooped her up like a child.
So, did I pass?
The row of white teeth, exposed by his smile, showed how much he was enjoying her humiliation. You knew?
Well, let's just say your poker face needs work. So, did I pass?
You passed. Like a kidney stone. How long did it take self-respect to regenerate? She started to protest being transported in this manner, but his expression silenced her. He carried her to the bed and deposited her with more tenderness than she deserved. Then he retrieved a towel from the bathroom and brought it to her.
You're wet.
Thank you. And for what it's worth, I'm sorry. Avoiding eye contact, she brushed imaginary dirt from her shirt.
At least now I know it's something you can't have had much experience or success with.
He sat on the edge of the bed and cupped her chin in his hand, stealing her breath and causing her heart to thump. He squinted into her eyes, then wiggled her head from side to side.
Anything hurting?
Other than the immense pain exploding in her heart, no. Physical attraction she understood, but tender care? This was new to her. She closed her eyes as he ran his fingers through her hair, feeling the back of her head for a lump. She winced.
Ah, there it is. Good news, I don't think you have a concussion.
He stood.
Stay put, I'll be right back.
There it is. Bad news. I think I broke my own heart. She didn't bother telling him he'd found the lump she acquired in an earlier fall. She opened her eyes, thankful his back was to her as he headed out the door, so he didn't see the tears clinging just above her lashes.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.